This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. And if that 8-bit music made your heart race or put a smile on your face, guess what? You're probably a video gamer. And that connects you to millions of people around the world, including me, and including 1A's Paige Osborne. Recently, Paige went to the premier video game conference, E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo. There were more than 200 exhibits, nearly 100,000 attendees, and games, thousands of games.
A rat-like thing in pajamas turned into a computer at one point and shot a laser out the middle. Oh no, that's the other guy.
So you've got these.
That's a pig guy on a skateboard.
Developers and publishers spend a week showing off the best upcoming titles, granting interviews, recruiting talent, giving demonstrations.
Right now he's trying to load into the experience, but it appears something has frozen. It's not what I want to be narrating live.
And talking about the future of the industry. But one idea comes up over and over.
And it's the modern, you know, playdate for kids these days. And it's how people interact, it's how they chat, it's how they make friends.
They are the greatest form of entertainment in the world by any measure you want to use, whether it's in the revenue, whether it's in the number of people playing or whatever. And in large part, I think that's because of the interactive nature.
Game. You asked earlier what video games are doing right. We're becoming more and more social.
Borderlands. The stereotype of playing video games is that it's antisocial, a way to disconnect from the real world and other people. That stereotype was unfair from the beginning. It's even less fair today, because today there are more ways than ever to connect over a game, both in-game and in so-called real life. Today we start a special series exploring the issues surrounding video games and modern gaming. We're calling it Game Mode. We'll bring you industry experts, developers, creators, and, of course, players. We begin with a look at the gaming community, the gamers who have come to mean something to one another as players and as people. Joining us from NPR in New York is Cecilia DiAnastasio, a senior reporter at the video game culture website Kotaku. Cecilia, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Ian Hazzacostas, the game director for the multiplayer online game World of Warcraft. That game celebrated its 15th anniversary this year. Ian, welcome to 1A.
Thanks, great to be here.
And Mark Fishbach is a YouTube creator and streamer with roughly 24 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. He is better known by his online name, Markiplier. Mark, glad to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Let me begin with you, Cecilia, and there's a term we should define before we get any further for those who aren't familiar with this world of gaming, and that's MMO. What is an MMO?
An MMO is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game. So that's any game in the genre of World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy XIV, EverQuest, and these are games that have plots, but mostly the plot is accomplishable and the gameplay is accomplishable by coordinating with other players.
Now, these are also games where you can get on and in some cases kind of go your own way. There's not just one track to the storyline of the game. You can kind of, in many ways, just kind of choose your own adventure, right?
Yes, yes.
Ian, you've been working on World of Warcraft for more than a decade, as I understand it. For those who aren't familiar with it, what is World of Warcraft? What's it about?
So World of Warcraft is it's a high fantasy adventure set in the world of Azeroth, a fictional Blizzard universe that has its origins in a series of real-time strategy games.
Blizzard, that's the company that makes World of Warcraft, right?
That's right, yes.
Okay.
It is a set of shared worlds where millions of people from around the world connect, interact, and adventure. It's swords and sorcery. Players can choose to take on the role of a mighty sword-wielding warrior or a clever mage or, you know, a hunter who attacks their enemies from afar. And they play through a story. They overcome enemies. They make friends and sometimes make new enemies along the way.
And just to be clear, Ian, when you say millions of players, you're not just talking about millions over the course of like a year. At some moments, at any given moment, there may be millions of players playing Warcraft at the same time around the world, right?
That's correct, yes.
I imagine you've seen gaming change a lot, Ian, since you started working on Warcraft. What have been some of the biggest changes in terms of the way that the players interact with one another?
So I think I've been working on the game for just over 10 years, but I've been playing the game since day one, 15 years ago. I think some of the biggest changes are the interconnectivity of the internet just becoming the default. It's the norm for how people interact with each other. I think when I first played World of Warcraft in 2004, there was something novel and magical about the idea that all of these other avatars around me were real people from around the world. And maybe some people have had had a taste of these interactions in places like America Online chat rooms. But for many, World of Warcraft was what brought that type of experience into the mainstream. Whereas now, I think in a world of social media and Facebook and Twitter and heavily integrated online gaming across all platforms, that is just, it's widespread. It's something that the rest of the industry has taken and adopted, and it's something that's just blown up outside of gaming as well.
Mark Fishbach, you have a different kind of a social gaming world in that you've kind of connected with gamers through a YouTube channel where you will play games, talk about games, document the rest of your life as well. What made you decide to start doing that on YouTube?
I thought it was easy, at first anyway. I didn't know how to operate a camera to do sketch comedy things. But I knew how to play video games, and people said that I had a good voice. So I kind of put two and two together, and my brother introduced me to the concept of a Let's Play, which is what you usually call someone just playing a game and you uploading a video of it. So I just took my love of playing games into a world where I wanted to make what I wanted to make, which at the time was just simple videos. And that was the building blocks for where I am today.
I should say, Mark, by the way, we generally have a rule of not inviting any guest on the program who has a better voice than I have. So just want you to know that you are the one exception. You're the one for the year. So we're not going to let anymore for the rest of the year. Now, some of the videos that you make are just you playing through video games. Some of them, I have to say, I love your channel. Some of them are absolutely hilarious because they are you playing games that are like horror games, like Five Nights at Freddy's, that are designed to make you pee on yourself. What is it about these videos that appeals to your viewers?
I think it's part of that couch gaming mentality, but blown up on a bigger scale. People love playing those experiences together. And some people like playing it alone because they're masochists and they like the fear and they like the adrenaline. But also, you know, if you wouldn't normally play a scary game like that by yourself, you want to feel like you're in a group, or you want to feel like you're sharing the burden of the jump scares with other people, or sharing that experience through someone else as a proxy, and then being able to laugh about it in the comments. There's something very communal about, you know, emulating the idea of being in a movie theater watching a scary movie and everyone screaming at the same time. But if you were in a movie theater by yourself and no one else was there, it'd be much more terrifying.
Mark, you've said before in interviews that you're interested in games, but you're more interested in the communities that grow up around games. Elaborate on that a little bit. Can you give me an example of what that might look like?
Yeah, I first realized that there was a bigger connection to what I was doing just by playing games, because when I first started out, I thought I was just playing games and uploading videos and that was the end of it. But I remember going to a convention back in 2013, and I was very, very early in my days on YouTube. I think I had about 2,000 subscribers, which was a lot at the time. But when I went to a convention, I didn't expect anybody to come up and say hi to me, but five people did. And I started to really connect the dots that these weren't just numbers behind a screen. They weren't just subscribers as a ethereal concept of people. They were real people with individual lives that took time out of their day to watch one of my videos. And it placed this kind of responsibility on my shoulders. This kind of thinking about my channel not necessarily as a medium of entertainment, but as a place where people can kind of come together. And that's actually what inspired me to start my first charity live stream to raise money for Child's Play, which is a charity that gives video games and consoles to kids who are in hospitals.
Cecilia, before we pause, we should note there are lots of ways that players get together other than joining up to play. You've written about things like in-game theater troupes. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely right. In 2016, a player who goes by Wanderer Sabaku in the game Final Fantasy XIV, which is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, invited me to his in-game mansion to show me a live performance of a play that he and about a dozen other players were putting on It was outfitted with like cushioned seats. There was a balcony. There was a stage, of course, and live. All of these people had coordinated all of these kind of emotes, which are in-game animations that can express kind of sleeping, getting killed, kind of laughing, clapping,
right,
along with dialogue to show this play. And they had 50 people come and watch it.
Much more we want to discuss about the creativity inside games when we continue with Cecilia D'Anastasio, Ian Hazzacostas, and Mark Fishbach, better known as Markiplier. I'm Joshua Johnson. Glad to be with you, and you are playing along with 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the social aspects of video gaming. We asked you to tell us your stories about the relationships you've made through video games. You did not disappoint. We got a ton of responses, but these two voicemails kind of sum up a lot of the sentiments we heard. Here is a quick mashup of those two messages that landed in our inbox.
This is Drew Getter from Nashville, Tennessee.
I'm Alex from Marysville, Pennsylvania.
When I was in middle school, I played a lot of this game called Minecraft, but I met a guy on there, and I'm in college now, and he's like my best friend, and we live on opposite sides of the country.
I found video games, especially through like late middle school, early high school, to be really good in building networks. Sounds kind of corny, but that's basically what it was.
I have this best friend now who is nothing like any of my other friends.
Honestly, I don't think I would have interacted with those people had it not been for video games.
Knowing him has opened my eyes to a lot of things that I never would have seen otherwise.
Drew, Alex, thank you both very much for sharing your stories. Ian Hazzacostas, what about that creativity? I imagine that over time, players interacted through World of Warcraft in ways that maybe the designers didn't expect.
Yes, and I think ultimately when we're creating a world that people are going to inhabit, people are going to express themselves as humans. And so I just like the story Cecilia told. I mean, I think in World of Warcraft, there are also very engaged role-playing communities who, rather than playing through our story, are actually creating their own and interacting with each other to take on parts and act out their own adventures and dramas and romances and everything else. Players also, there's an incredible diversity in terms of the ways people approach a game like World of Warcraft, the goals they set for themselves, and they're not always necessarily the goals that we as the game's creators originally imagined. Some people, rather than advancing through the traditional progression and trying to, earn the power that's there to be earned, instead just want to collect things and want to customize the appearance of their character. And that's a way, in which players have in many ways influenced the road that we've taken as developers, because we're looking at the ways players want to experience the world, and we're going to evolve the game to cater to that as well. And so they're helping create and take part in the building of the world.
Now, Ian, how do you make World of Warcraft work for longtime players and new players? I can imagine that if someone, hears this and says, oh, Warcraft, I should give that a shot, that diving in from zero can feel super intimidating, A, because it's such a gigantic game, and B, because you're walking into a community of millions of people who already get it, and you're the new person who doesn't get it. That's got to be hard to strike that balance.
It's definitely a challenge, but the game is something that we are constantly updating and trying to strike a balance between, giving something deep and interesting for folks who have been playing the game for over a decade and keeping it accessible to people who are picking it up for the very first time. There are countless people who try World of Warcraft for the first time every day, and we've made sure, as we've continued to update the game, to give paths to let people get caught up and jump into the latest content and learn the things that they need to learn, while also having this wealth of a dozen years of worlds and storytelling to explore as something to fall back on if they so choose.
Cecilia, I'd love to get your response to this comment from Jeff, who writes, games have been extremely social for decades at this point. Sleepovers, playing an 8, 16, or 64-bit game till the sun came up in the late 80s, LAN parties in the 90s, the MMO boom of the early aughts, then modern digital online-only games, and now current AR stuff, augmented reality, like Pokemon Go and Wizards Unite. Video games have always been social. So, Cecilia, if video games have always been social, how did they get this reputation for being antisocial?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I don't think that that reputation is completely off base. I agree with the commenter that games have been social for decades, and they are still social in all of those ways. There are still LAN cafes. Kids are still playing Nintendo Switch together. You know, people are obviously engaging in social gaming in new ways. However, I think that some psychologies lend themselves to excessive gaming, and there's a big debate about whether that's, you know, the fault of game mechanics or people have pre-diagnosed, you know, mental health conditions. But there is a large group of people who do game to an extent that is harmful for them, and that does take them away from their real-life friends and family.
It's worth noting, by the way, that the World Health Organization this year did list gaming disorder as an illness. Not something inherent to gaming, but as something that certain people may be susceptible to. By the way, Cecilia, you mentioned a LAN cafe, L-A-N. What is a LAN cafe?
Yeah, so LAN cafes are I guess, businesses where you kind of walk in, you pay $5 an hour, and you can play any PC game that you yourself own on your home computer on their really fancy computers. And you can order drinks and food. You can go there with your friends who might not have a gaming PC at home. There's actually one in New York called Waypoint. Brand new, really fun. They host Smash tournaments. Like, it's cool. It's experiencing a resurgence right now.
Mark, at what point did you realize that your channel was a thing, that you had tapped into something that people wanted to see more of?
I mean, pretty much that same story I mentioned earlier, but also when I hit about 10,000 subscribers, when I thought that it would be so far beyond everything I imagined, because 10,000 people, that could fit in, you know, a huge stadium or something like that, or a big theater or an open concert venue. Like, that number of people was unimaginable to me, who was the kind of person that didn't have a lot of friends growing up. I wasn't very social. I was kind of the typical, you know, secluded gamer. I played games in my basement all the time, and I cherish those memories that I had when I was playing games, but also I kind of wish that I went outside a few more times here and there, but I liked it a lot.
How often do you post, Mark?
About once a day. I used to do two a day, but now I do one longer video a day.
That's got to get kind of exhausting. How do you manage that and take care of yourself?
Good question. I was up until 4 a.m. last night working on videos, and then I got up at 7 to join you here. But I love what I do. I love making things, and I love playing games, and I love pushing myself to try new creative things, and I love learning, and I love the response I get from people who really thoroughly enjoy what I do, or even casually enjoy what I do. The fact that people are appreciating something that I make, it's not an experience that a lot of people get to have in their life, and I have to, you know, not take that for granted and always be willing to do what it takes to give people both the content they deserve and give me a sense of purpose in my life.
And is this a hobby for you, like a side pursuit? Is this your primary job, or like where does this fit in your life?
Oh, this is 100% my job. It's been my job for about 6 years now.
Ian, same question in a way in terms of sustainability. A lot of these games are becoming more about kind of a game as a service where they constantly update and they add campaigns and characters and levels. Some of these games, you know, like Warframe, for example, are free to download. You can start playing for free and then you kind of pay for additional stuff once you get in the game. That constant hunger for new content has also got to be a challenge, not just for a YouTube creator like Mark, but for a big gaming ecosystem like Warcraft.
Certainly. You know, I think that's, you know, the nature of what our entire development team is, you know, is centered around. While someone can jump in and play World of Warcraft through a free trial and check it out, we charge a monthly subscription, and that subscription, just like, you know, for Netflix or other services, goes towards supporting the creation of as much content as the team can produce, so that there's always a new chapter in the story, a new world to explore, a new goal to strive for. Players, a lot of what keeps them rooted in the world we create are the connections they've made with each other and their friends and their guildmates that they're working with. But, you know, groups want a new challenge, want a new place to explore. And so I think it's incumbent on us to always keep that content coming, always make sure there's something around the corner.
Derpstate tweeted, please talk about the potential dangers of these relationships and communities as well. Cecilia, that's what I wanted to pivot to with you, because we got a number of comments from people about the darker side of the social aspect of gaming. Nikki tweets, I hope you cover the issue of sexism. The number of females getting into gaming has skyrocketed, yet sexist language, harassment, and abuse is rampant. Game makers need to start addressing this issue to make sure all players have the best experience, not just males. Cecilia, what about that, this concern about toxicity in the community as it relates to racism and sexism and homophobia?
It's a really big topic, but as it pertains to gaming communities, kind of even outside of the video games themselves on YouTube and on Twitch, there is an epidemic of kind of predatory micro-celebrities who use their platform to kind of groom and prey on younger women. And this happens in part because, you know, as Mark was saying, like, there's this expectation to kind of be producing content all the time, to be extremely accessible on all platforms, Discord, Twitter, Skype, Twitch, you know, YouTube, and that can lead people to form relationships that, you know, kids wouldn't normally form with celebrities. So that's one aspect of kind of predatory behavior and harassment that can manifest through the gaming community. But yeah, I mean, I do think things are getting better, but there are still pockets of poor behavior, asocial behavior. You know, for a while, there were even people who would drop into women's Twitch chats just to monitor whether their clothing was appropriate to stream or whether their, you know, their shirt was too low cut. And if, you know, this roving group of vigilante censors thought, you know, these women didn't live up to their standards, they would report them to Twitch. So yeah, things can still be rocky out there.
Do you think, Cecilia, that this is something that's unique to the gaming community, or is this a reflection of the larger world?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, you know, humans play games. Human impulses translate into games through the filter of game mechanics and systems. And so if the impulse to sexism or harassment exists in a person, then it's possible and likely that will manifest through games, especially when you can hide behind the shield of anonymity. There, you know, even when I play the first person shooter Overwatch, I'll get comments about my voice. And I definitely think that a lot of women who have played massively multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy XIV have had male characters go up to them and offer free help or free items in exchange for, you know, favors or female attention. It's a very multifaceted topic for sure.
And Cecilia, I just want to be clear. When you say you get comments on your voice, it's because some games allow you to speak in real time to the other players over the web, right?
Correct.
I want to talk a little bit more about this. And Ian and Mark, I'd love to get your sense of this as well. When we continue with Ian Hazzacostas of World of Warcraft, Mark Fishbach, better known on YouTube as Markiplier, and Cecilia D'Anastasio of Kotaku, we'll get into some more of the negative interactions and also some great stories y'all have shared about the very positive interactions you've had through gaming, including some that have changed your lives for the better. Stay close.
Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Building a good relationship with your doctor can be really hard, especially when it feels like you have such a short amount of time with them.
I don't know what it is about walking into the doctor's office, but it's incredibly easy to forget half of what you wanted to tell the doctor.
Check out NPR Life Kit's new guide on navigating doctor-patient relationships, or subscribe to Life Kit All Guides for all of our episodes all in one place.
Back now to our conversation with Cecilia D'Anastasio, Ian Hazzacostas, and Mark Fishbach, better known as Markiplier, talking about how games build community in-game and in real life. Glad to get some more of your thoughts. Here's another voicemail that landed in our inbox.
My name is Chris Mullen, and I'm from Boynton Beach, Florida, and I've met some of the best friends of my entire life through gaming. I actually have two of them, one from the UK and one from Spain, who are flying into Orlando, and I'll be picking them up, and we'll be meeting each other for the very first time after knowing each other online for years. I'm really glad you guys are doing this to show that not all of us are, you know, Dorito-eating Mountain Dew drinkers.
Thanks, Chris, for sharing your story. Nothing against Doritos or Mountain Dew, man, if that's your thing. But congratulations on meeting these people for the first time. We'll talk a little bit more about those positive interactions in a minute, but I want to close the loop on these negative interactions. And Ian and Mark, I'd like to put that to you as well. I mean, Ian, I wonder how Warcraft has dealt with this. I mean, these people who may be doing things that are antisocial are also spending a lot of money on Warcraft. So if you cracked down hard, it could affect your bottom line. However, personally, I don't see what's wrong with saying if you make a racist or sexist or homophobic or anti-Semitic comment to another player, you are banned for life. Period. What's wrong with that?
Honestly, there isn't a whole lot wrong with it. You know, I think the reason why the term part of the coining of the term toxicity is the negative effect that some individuals, disproportionate to, you know, their presence in the world, can have on the circles around them. There's no world in which, you know, it's not a financial issue at all. You know, we would happily get rid of all of the negative players who are ruining the experiences for others. I think the challenge is all about identifying them, applying the right standards to them, and, you know, policing our community as a whole. I think what you see in gaming is a broader reflection of the function of anonymity on the internet as a whole. I think we've seen in a variety of venues where individuals are freed from accountability and the consequences of their actions because they can be behind a screen, be behind some handle that unleashes some of the worst tendencies in a minority of those individuals, but it can have a disproportionate effect on the experience of everyone around them. And it's something we're constantly discussing on our end and trying to combat.
Ian Hazzacostas, the game director for World of Warcraft. Ian, thanks for talking to us.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Cecilia D'Anastasio, senior reporter at Kotaku. Thank you, Cecilia.
Thank you for having me.
And Mark Fishbach, a YouTube creator better known as Markiplier. Mark, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's bring in one more guest before our time is up. All this week, we're going to use the end of this hour to spotlight someone whose livelihood revolves around gaming. We mentioned a platform called Twitch earlier. It's the top platform for live streaming games. And if you think people don't really want to watch someone else play video games, think again.
This is Jenny from Lafayette, Indiana. When I was a kid growing up, I never had much of a chance to play video games because video games are expensive, and also my parents didn't really believe in the goodness of video games. And now as an adult, I'm trying to get back into gaming on my own, but I found a lot of enjoyment just watching other people play games, mainly through streaming services like Twitch. There's a whole community of people out there who play games on the internet for other people to watch, and I formed many friendships with these people who just like to watch other people play video games.
And let's meet somebody who gets watched playing video games. Joining us now from Vancouver is Kristen Valnicek. She spends hours live streaming on Twitch under the handle Kitty Plays and has been turning a profit because of it. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Hi, Joshua. Thank you so much for having me.
Walk me through a day in your life. What do you do on Twitch?
Typically, I'll wake up in the morning, do my morning routine, get in a really great mindset, have high energy, and then log on to my computer, boot up the stream, and play some games and have some fun with my community.
Give me a sense of what we see. How long are you streaming for? What games are you typically playing? That kind of thing.
So the stream time ranges typically between 4 to 8 hours, 4 being my favorite, the most efficient amount of time to stream. And that's about 5 days a week. But in the past, for the first 2 years of streaming when I was growing my channel, it was between, 10 to 14 hours a day.
Continuously?
So, thankfully. Continuously, yeah. Thankfully, I had my parents to support me, and they'd bring me food as I was streaming, but it was quite the couple years.
How did you get into doing this?
So I've been a gamer my whole life. My dad was the biggest influence for me for gaming. He was a big gamer, played a lot of Quake and Doom and Unreal Tournament when I was growing up. And then when I found streaming, it was just the perfect opportunity for me to find other gamers to play with because my family was so busy they didn't have time to play with me anymore. And then also to put my business acumen to use and turn it into a real career.
Talk about that career. How does that work?
So in terms of earning money, there's a lot of different ways you can earn money through gaming now. But on Twitch specifically, you build your stream to a point where you have enough followers to get partnered on the website. And you earn revenue through tips or donations, which is an amount of money that people give you to support your content that goes directly into your PayPal. And also subscriptions, which is $4.99, $9.99, or $24.99 a month that people will pay for perks that the partner decides upon. And then also there's things like sponsorships, appearance fees, and a whole bunch of other things like consulting that you can start to do once you grow your channel and understand the space better.
Not to get too personal, Kristen, but how lucrative has this been for you?
Oh, it's been incredibly lucrative. I've been doing it now full time for the last 5.5 years. I was originally planning on going into law, and I earn a lot more money doing this and loving my job every day.
I can't let you go without asking you about toxicity in gaming. I wonder how much you have dealt with trolls online and how you deal with them.
Yeah, as a gamer in the live online space since I was about 12 years old playing Halo 2, I've experienced a lot of varied toxicity. But one thing that I always like to talk about is just how much it has improved, how much game developers are going out of their way to make tools to protect people, and then also how you're able to handle it. Now we're really in a space where everyone on Twitch does celebrate women, especially being on the platform. The game developers, other pro players, other streamers, and the community themselves are really supportive as well. Originally, when I was on the platform, it definitely felt like a place where people were trying to push me off of. But now, they're encouraging more women and new people to join.
And briefly, before I got to let you go, tell me about Team Kitty, a networking and mentoring program for women creators, before we let you go.
Yeah, so Team Kitty is a group of approximately 100 broadcasters. They are professional, upbeat, charismatic women who I started the team with the intention of having women collaborate and support each other. Rising tide raises all ships, and sometimes there can be toxicity even among women on the platform. So this was just a way to bring them together to talk about, different things that we handle that are a little bit different than the men on the website, but also provide any and all opportunities to collaborate and support and spread love.
Kristen Valnicek is a professional video game streamer on Twitch, the top live streaming platform for gamers. Her handle on Twitch is Kitty Plays. That's K-I-T-T-Y Plays. Kristen, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joshua. Have a great day.
This conversation was produced by Paige Osborne, and our 8-bit theme was produced by our lead audio engineer, Jake Cherry. Miranda Fulmore edited the program. To learn more about our team, check out the1a.org/staff. And remember, this is day one of our series, Game Mode. You'll find all the episodes when you subscribe to the 1A podcast. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.